Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
Robert is being chased, thrown on the run, and it is caught! Touchdown! Keenan Allen! What a great...
My goal is not to break you. My goal is to make you harder to break.
Comes back! Number six! Number six!
Huge sack by Joey Bosa!
90-yard touchdown! 90-yard touchdown!
Ripped off at the 8-yard line by Derwin James.
Sets his feet, takes a shot downfield, has night and caught! Touchdown, Chargers!
Grab your lunch boxes and go attack this game with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
Well, hello, and just like that, 2024 is over and 2025 has started. It just seems like yesterday I was just putting that intro video together for the season 2024. Now we're having to reuse it for a brand new season. We're back, TDU fam. Welcome, the Thunder Down Under Chargers podcast. My name is Jack Reed, filling in for our esteemed and incredible host, Andy, who couldn't be with us here today. This is kind of the unofficial season start, I think, Alistair, because it's not really official until we're all here. Obviously, I've got my friend, my colleague, my Charger compatriot, Alistair, with me today. How are you, sir?
Great, man. Season four. Oh, man. We were together on the weekend for a wedding of one of our best friends. Congratulations to them. We had a phenomenal time. And it just got to a certain point in the night, I reckon, when we were well lubricated, me, you and Andy, the little murmuring started about TDU, the podcast, and it just felt like the right time to come back. We're entering season four. After four seasons, you wonder, is our message still being received by the players? Are the listeners still, you know, we've got to reinvent ourselves. We've got to find a way to keep things light. So our message is coming across. But man, we've picked our time. We've left our run late. I'm really pleased that we don't have to waste time talking about guys at the top of the market who very often get tagged or extended. So we didn't waste hours watching Trey Smith film or T. Higgins film. And we can just sweep in with a few days before free agency and attack it.
I know. And listen, this is when you, in the off-season, Alistair, you're the numbers guy, and our lovely friends over at the Powder Keg podcast, Ryan and Kyle, this, I feel like it's your guys' bread and butter. You put the glasses on, the contract talks start coming out, and that's when I just start going, what is life? I have no idea what's going on. So listeners, if you are like me, I'm going to be that kind of person on these podcasts moving forward. I'm going to be the neophyte, dare I say. But Alistair, I know you've put in a lot of work already, and so have those other two guys with free agents and contract negotiations, what we could be doing in the free agent market and also with our trades. It's that time of year where my mind boggles and I just can't imagine what being a GM at this time of year would be like. I don't think I'd sleep. My phone would be on loud all the time. And I'm sure Joe Ortiz is doing his best. Same with Harbaugh. Before we get into the nuts and bolts, just a really high overview of what we're going to do today. We're quickly going to go through some of the most recent news that we have heard from Chargers camp. So coaching, some roster news that I think most people will be over, but I think it's interesting maybe to our listeners to have our takes on it. Just a couple of other things as well. But then kind of maybe 20 or so minutes in, we're going to get into the free agency discussion, as you alluded to before, Alistair. Anything else before we get going, mate? Anything else?
Please start us off and to anticipate where we might be going. I think this could be the last time I ever wear this uniform on the show.
Indeed. I know. I'm come straight from work, straight from the barbershop as well. I would like to thank, I've got a fresh fade as well for those who are on YouTube. But let's get going. So in terms of coaching news, Alistair, there's a lot there. Safeties coach leaves, Chris O'Leary. We've got a new safeties coach. We've got Dylan Roney, Chargers assistant GM interviews, Sanjay Lal. Anything of those or anything else that has come across your desk that you are interested in perhaps expanding on at all?
Yeah, one, and then I've got a question for you. So you briefly mentioned our assistant GM, Chad Alexander, who's been doing the rounds with media during the combine. He's an impressive fella, basically Joe Ortiz's right-hand man who came with him from Baltimore. He had two interviews for GM jobs this offseason with the Jags and the Raiders. Made the final round of interviews for the Raiders role, ultimately didn't get it. Why it's interesting is, as a minority staff member, now that he's been with the Chargers for two full seasons by the end of next year, all of a sudden that is a trigger for compensation. If he gets a GM job elsewhere after next year, the Chargers get two third-round picks in back-to-back years as a reward for one of your minority staffers getting a GM job elsewhere. Had he got the job this year, that wouldn't have qualified. So just an interesting mechanism that suddenly you're rewarded for growing your own, and he looks like he's close to getting a big chair job sometime soon. My question to you, mate, is you did mention there has been a lot of interviews, but actually quite limited movement within the coaching staff. Marcus Brady had an interview, didn't get the job. The Raiders tried to poach Sanjay Lal. We blocked it. The only
thank
real
God, sweet, Sanjay thank staying, goodness. Which is amazing. Hey, yes.
And that links to other moves we're going to talk about. Ooh, no doubt, it does. Of course.
It does.
Really, the only moves we've had is out of obligation because our safety coach decided he wanted to be a defensive coordinator in the college ranks. Now, are you concerned about that at all? So there are some guys in the staff, Mark Tressman, the offensive line coach, Marcus Brady. Maybe their units didn't perform that well this year, arguably. However, Harbaugh said, no, stay the course. I want to basically bring everyone back. Do you think that's a mistake? What do you think about it?
Oh, I don't think you can read that much into it. There's something to say with continuity, with a brand new head coach and a brand new staff. I think trying to break it up after a season that you'd argue, and you could easily argue, was very successful. It was better than I had thought. And so to say that some coaches underperformed, yes, if you took the specific positional group or some certain things that didn't perhaps go the way we'd hoped, I think that's probably, you know, you're picking at the apple without actually seeing the whole thing. So from an organizational culture continuity standpoint, my position would be if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So far, it hasn't really seen that it's that broke. Now, we get 24 months at the end of next year to go, okay, Ortiz and Harbaugh have had two full seasons at the helm. They've had two full drafts. They've had a proper crack at free agency this time. Realistically, we didn't have a great crack at free agency when they first took over because we were managing cap hell. In terms of continuity, I think it's absolutely fine. The biggest thing about Chad Alexander is that, yes, he made the final, but I do wonder if that's kind of a, hey, in a couple of years, you are going to be, you know, we'd love you to go for a GM role, but it'd be really nice if you just maybe waited a year so we could get some of those comp picks. So you do wonder the conversations there. Obviously, you'd never want to hinder someone from getting a big role like that. But I think there's a lot of tactics. And I am a person that does want to see the Chargers become a coaching tree. I'd love to see a Ortiz GM tree, and I'd love to see a Harbaugh tree that we're already starting to perhaps see in people like Jesse Minter. You know, if he has another good year, he might be a head coach coming into 2026. So who knows?
Very softball question to start the season. We call a lay down mazair for the card playing folk in Australia. I'll try to make some harder ones.
That was challenging. That required some thought on my behalf. I have you.
But
know.
I knew where you're going to go. Continuity, organizational structure. I gave you a chance to play your greatest hits. I've got to push you somewhere out of your comfort zone as we move on. But I agree with you for the record. I wouldn't have had any rash moves.
I mean, I think it's at the end of this season coming where I think the axe might swing a little bit. Some roster news, possibly before we get into the big one. Elijah Molden coming off a fairly substantial leg and knee injury, torn ACL, torn MCL, and a broken fibula or whatever it is, one of the bones of your leg. I'm missing Andy here. Sorry. Need the exercise physiologist on the pod. What do you think?
I can feel his eyes rolling.
Yeah. 3 years at 18.75, 13.5 guaranteed. What do you feel? Good, bad, or just kind of what we needed?
Love it. Love it because I think every aspect of the deal makes sense. So where that pegs him is, you know, 26th highest paid safety in the NFL with guys like Marcus Epps and Rashawn Jenkins. So just the per year value of, you know, 6.25 million per year is a very fair price. The risk element that I think we've helped him out is to say of that 18.75 million, you're definitely getting 13.5 of it. So I think he's probably accepted unders as an average price per year, but we've given him that security coming off injury to know that if things really don't work out and you're not the same player and we need to cut you after the first year, you're going to walk away with a lot of money from us. So I think it's one where everybody wins. Schematically, he allows us to unlock Derwin in the slot because it's that third safety on the field. An interesting one to think about is his price point versus Aloe Gilman's now, Jack. What that does, so Gilman will be a free agent at the end of 2025, and his cap hit this year is 6.75 million, which is pretty similar to what Elijah will make per year. Do you feel like there's any chance that they would cut Gilman in the next couple of weeks? If they cut him, they save $4.5 million and 2.25 is dead. So they save $4.5 million. If they keep him, they've got to pay him 6.75 while they're paying Molden 3.67 and they're paying Derwin about 20.
Well, this is the interesting thing. Because we've had Chris O'Leary leave, and arguably the safety group was the best performing unit given the injuries and given the amount of turnover that happened in the room. Now we've got Adam Fuller coming in, who was, where's he coming from? He's coming from Florida State defensive coordinator, I believe, where he coached Asante. So it's a really hard one because we arguably saw that, well, it kind of doesn't matter who you are of that second safety coming in behind Derwin James. We just need you to play a role. And we saw multiple players, Molden being one of them, Tony Jefferson. We had Marcus May come in as well. And listen, do a good enough job. So you kind of wonder if you're looking at a close to just over $4 million, is that too much to pay when you've also got Molden on similar money to have three safeties making a decent chunk of money from your defensive roster? So I don't know, because arguably Alohi Gilman didn't have a great year last year and Molden was far better, but was Molden good because Gilman was there? So there's far too many questions. What say you of that question?
I just think they're not, I don't think they'll do it. I think they will stick to him, but I can see why you're thinking about it, because it is true that Minter seems to be able to make wine from water. So could they do it? Yeah, I think they'd be fine. But will they at a cap hit of 6.75? I don't think so, because you've got three veteran guys who've been around for ages. I don't think it will happen. I wouldn't do it either. But it's interesting you mention it, because that safeties coach, Chris O'Leary, who's left, was with Aloe at Notre Dame. They're the two who have the connection. So in comes Florida State, who's friends with Asante. A lot of swings and roundabouts. So that's the news on Elijah Molden. Yeah. I'm happy with the signing.
Yeah, me too. I think he deserved it. Let's just hope that the medicals, and clearly they know that the medicals are going to look okay, because I tell you what, that's a pretty nasty injury to come back from. Speaking of wine turning to absolute piss, we now have to say goodbye to the jersey number that you are wearing. And maybe that was a bit harsh on Joey Bosa, but the Chargers have made the move to release him, and this is saving a absolute fortune of just over $25 million with 11-ish in dead cap. He finishes second all-time on the Chargers behind Leslie O'Neal in terms of sacks, Bosa having 72. O'Neal had a staggering 105.5. I still remember the day we drafted this guy, and it was exciting. And I think he's been a great journeyman. He's had his ups and downs, and he's been, in my mind, cuttable perhaps for the last 3-ish years, ever since the end of that Staley era. Are we going to miss him, Alistair? That's my question to you, because everyone thinks it's right. We all look at the money. But was Joey Bosa effective? Maybe not at that amount of money, but was Joey Bosa still making a difference in this organization? What do you think?
We're going to miss the concept of him. Yeah. Because when he played and was healthy, he was still elite. Look no further than week one against the Raiders. I think he had two sacks and a strip and chased Minshew out of the pocket. He was outstanding. The facts are, over the past three seasons, he played 29.6% of total snaps. Three seasons! While still being something like the, you know, top 12 highest paid pass rushers in the NFL. So on the field, I think you won't really miss him because he has not been there to miss, unfortunately. Off the field, I think it's fine because he is maybe a little more reserved. I don't know if he's... I think people respect him. Don't get me wrong. I think his teammates respect him, but he's not the rah-rah type. He's flowing with leadership. That said, I've gone on a full ride with Joey Bosa. Like you, after that Jacksonville game, I'd got to the point where I was totally fed up with him. The offsides, the body, the helmet smash. But he's almost not totally redeemed himself, but he's somewhat redeemed himself these past 12 to 18 months by taking a pay cut, $6 or $7 million, I think it was, to stay with the team. I think he's sounded more mature and self-reflective over time with the press conferences he's given. Wanted to retire a Charger. It's just, for the reasons you gave, Jack, too much sense to save the $25 million. And maybe let him go play with his brother in San Francisco. They can wear their MAGA hats together as they bash into the quarterback.
I kind of wonder what the conversation was. I can't remember who reported it, but someone did say that they walked into an empty mess hall or food hall and Joey Bosa was having a conversation with Harbaugh. And it seemed like a fairly intense one at the start of last year. And I wonder what was said there. I wonder what Harbaugh said in terms of the, you know, this is going to be your last year. We're going to do our best with you. Or was it going to be you're on a lot of money. I know it's been hard. And I do feel for Joey because he has been asked to do multiple different things. And I've said this before on an earlier podcast that I wonder the issues with his body is because he's been fluctuating. Is he a run-stopping defensive end? Is he a linebacker that drops into coverage? Staley wanted him to play a little bit heavier. And those fluctuations in weight, and sometimes I think he talked about anywhere between sort of 15 and 20 pounds of muscle and weight, that takes its toll. So, and we're kind of seeing that his brother is having similar sort of issues as well. But all the best to him. I do hope he goes to San Fran. That'd be fun seeing the Bosa brothers line up. I think just as a fan, that really excites me. And hopefully one day he can come back and sort of, you know, be part of the Chargers ring of honor. You don't know. Speaking of, if we move on, wonderful to hear Antonio Gates will be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I think it's great, which is awesome. Is his second year of eligibility? I'm fairly sure. Yeah. So
1 year too long, but he got there in the end. One of our favorites getting into the sport.
Agreed. Alistair, we had some interesting data that was released a while ago about the player survey and where the Chargers have ranked. Now, are you worried that Harbaugh has graded a B+? And ranked dead last about efficient use of time. His own players are saying that. Interesting. I thought a guy that's been paid $16 million as the marquee signing would have a mark better than B+. What say you?
It's a great question, and I don't want to brush it off too quickly. I think like any feedback you receive, Jack, you need to listen carefully and see if you can learn from it. And there are some learnings, to use an awful postmodern phrase, within these results. I don't think the B+ matters so much. I think, coaches who graded really highly aren't necessarily coaching the most successful teams. And maybe there's an element of being a disciplinarian where it doesn't
matter. Tough love, baby.
Yeah, tough love. Way more efficient with your words, Jack. But But you don't want to rank dead last in efficient use of time. And my concern is I don't think that's something he can fix at this point. Unfortunately, he's a guy in his early 60s who waffles a lot. I'm not sure he's got it in him not to tell these long-winded stories. You would hope that the coaches around him, he'd surround himself with maybe younger guys that add to a bit more of a youthful culture. Mm. But what do you think? Short answer, not overly concerned, but there's an opportunity to grow.
Yeah, listen, the B+ I think is as meaningless as almost anything. But the one thing, I guess, to defend Harbaugh in terms of efficiency is that players, I understand, want time to themselves. I get that, especially, you know, I am a teacher myself and kids sometimes just want to get on with the work. But in the early phases of building culture or building an organization, face time is one of the most important things you can do as a leader because you control the narrative. Yes, there are some messages that might be sent via text or via email, but just making sure that your tone and your clarity is clear to say that, you know, there's a difference in getting an email saying, hey guys, I want you to be at training half an hour early because we're going to go through some stuff. Players go, yeah, sure, no, whatever. You get up the night before and say, everyone's got to be here half an hour before training starts because I want to get through some stuff and it's going to be important. That's a completely different kind of message. And it also is kind of perhaps separating the wheat from the chaff. It's like, well, who really wants to be here? Are you going to put up with me? Sure. You need to earn the right to have your own time because at the moment, what you were doing before is not good enough. So I am in control here. I have the conversation. You will do what I say. Trust me. Who knows? I mean, I'm not going to be looking at that metric at the end of last season. We're going to look at the win and loss column. But the one thing is great is that obviously all the facilities at the Bolt are clearly exceptional. I was hoping for a little bit more than 8th from the food dining area. Like, come on, Wolfgang. There's a fucking pizza oven. You got pizza every day. Shouldn't be complaining about that. Especially, you should be the same thing, Alistair. You're Italian. Pizza every day. What a joy. But that's kind of where I am with that. I mean, it's good to see. It's obviously a fantastic facility. Alistair, last thing before we move into the free agency. Mm.
Your little friend,
Brandon Staley has a new role. Oh, for Brandon. He's out of the doldrums of being an assistant defensive coach of some kind. He's now the new DC in New Orleans. How do you feel?
Relieved that he's still at the end of I feel that he did not deserve this role based on what he did last year at the 49ers. No one really knows what he did, but the 49ers defense was poor and the defensive coordinator got fired. I expect if he didn't get this job, he's a position coach somewhere or he's back in college. This job with Kellen Moore in New Orleans I think is one of the least desirable jobs for a DC. They're completely cooked against the cap. I think the players on that roster are suited to a different kind of scheme. Corners like Kool-Aid McKinstry, man cover corners, not the Fangio zone cover corner. And they've got a lot of hard work to do. But you know what? It's an opportunity for Brandon to do different things. Everyone has completely diminished any role he had in creating that first overall Rams defense. Now, because he's done so poorly afterwards, they say it was all Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey. Well, now Brandon Staley gets a chance to work with a group of lesser talented players, potentially a bit like Jesse Minter got this year when he was handed Staley's old roster. And you can't ask for anything more than that. You've got a chance to be an NFL defensive coordinator and show people, show the industry who've lost all faith in you, that you can make wine from water. I don't think it's going to work out for him, but good luck. Hopefully he does all right. Before we move on, Jack, one thing I wanted to ask you that is you know, timely news with the NFL Combine having just occurred. Zion Johnson, there has been some discussion about him being worked in as a center.
Yep.
Clearly it's a need on the team unless they want to bring back Bradley Bozeman. What do you think about that idea? You take your first round guard after 3 seasons and try him out in a different spot.
Okay, let me start.
Do you believe it?
Let me start positively here. Yeah. That I've been tossing and turning over this. I always think that you've got to look at the athletic profile of a player to judge whether they can move to center. It's a completely different, I feel anyway, body type. They're generally smaller, they're shorter, and they have to be more flexible given the fact that they're snapping the ball. And they also have to be far more reactive. They're quicker, their feet are quicker. So I think Zion Johnson ticks the physical box in terms of his physical ability. He had that coming out of college. It just really hasn't translated into guard play at the NFL level at a consistent rate. He's had some good games and he's shown some growth. So that's my cup half full. He's a very, very smart individual. That's the one thing we keep hearing. He's got the brains. So is it such of a leap then, in my mind, for him to move to the center position? Mind you, I've never played offensive line. I've never coached offensive line. I know a bit about it from doing podcasts and analyzing. So take my opinion with a grain of salt, the positive one anyway. Sure, let's try it out. No problems.
Well, from your experience as a teacher, Jack, do you think there's a chance that this empowers him to improve some of the maybe football smart issues he's had with not picking up stunts and twists? The fact that he's going to be the pivot and involved in that direct snap with Herbert and maybe some of the pass protection, do you think that's helping or hindering a person who struggles with maybe the mental side of the game?
Well, so my negative side is that he's played guard his whole career. He's coming to the NFL as a guard. He's trained as a guard. And so now you're kind of putting your arm around him going, here, have a try at this position. So you're kind of damning with faint praise and going, you've been pretty average at the position that you've trained your whole life to be. Let's have a go here. Now, there's all sorts of other factors that go into that. How well you'd send that message, how well Zion receives it, how flexible his resilience is and all that kind of stuff. I worry, and this is the negative hat on, is that his decision-making, from what I've seen at left guard, is just not quick enough to be that reactive center. As I said, even though he's smart, he's a student of the game, you know, he's hardworking and things. Just the head on the swivel, looking for players to, not only looking for players to get in a run scheme, but then also knowing when to release on a double team to go and help out another side. I just don't think I've seen that enough. And that is a skill in and of its own, to be so flexible in a very, very high pressure situation. So I'm probably more negative than I am positive, but how do you feel about it?
Let's keep pushing on because we'll talk about it some more, I think, as part of our center dialogue.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get into it then. So we're not too bad. We're at 26 minutes. I think that's worthy. What we are going to do now, TDU crew, is we've got four topics, and those topics are: what moves should the team make before the new league year begins? Topic two is what to do with our RFAs and ERFAs. Topic three is what to do with our internal free agents. And then topic four, which I think is kind of the juicy part, is what external agents should the team sign, or should they trade for anyone? Let's start with topic number one. What moves should the team make before the new league year begins? We have 45 players currently under contract for 2025. Teams must be cap compliant by the first day of the new league year, using only cuts and restructures and extensions. We have $70 million to use. 90 after Bosa. That was an old, typo there. So we've saved on Bosa. What's your first point? What should we do, or what would you do, Alistair, if you were the GM in this situation?
I think there are a couple of... Look, it doesn't matter if you do it before free agency for one of these guys, and for the other it does. And some of these others we'll get into are guys who I'd let hit the market but still maybe try to re-sign them. So this off-season is going to be the off-season where we extend Rashawn Slater, in my opinion. Yep. And yep. I honestly would be happy to sign him to a five-year, $150 million deal, giving him $30 million a year, $90 million of a guaranteed. So 3 of the 5 seasons. And that basically puts him right there with Wirfs, Penei Sewell, Trent Williams, Christian Darrisaw. All of them are making between 27 and 28 mil a year. Now, Slater would get paid 30 mil a year, but the cap goes up each season. As we've seen this year, went up by the better part of $24 million. The cap went up by this year. So I would give him his 30. I don't want to muck around with the left tackle who's been durable and really good. That's my first big move. It does this for him, it doesn't need to be done before the new year starts because he's not a free agent. But that's something I want to do. And you don't need to change his first year cap hit too much. He's on the hook for $19 million this year. If you want to structure out the 150 over 5 years, you can still keep that first year to even lower cap hit than 19 if you want. That's my first big move, man.
Yeah, I think, and so I've, for a lot of this, folks, I'm going to be talking about, I've actually put together a crazy plan, an aggressive plan, and a conservative plan. So I'm not going to go through every single one, but for me, in my crazy plan idea for this topic, is that cut Joey Bosa, which we've already done. Now, the next big one is, what are we doing with Trey Pipkins? So in my crazy plan, we're cutting him, because cutting him saves $6.75 million. I think there are tackles or swing tackles or backup tackles out there that are far more competent than Trey Pipkins. I don't think Trey Pipkins has any value in a trade, bar maybe a fifth or sixth, possibly even only a sixth or seventh. He didn't do it at guard. I think $6.75 million could be used somewhere else.
Jack.
And hello.
That's what I do in the most anodyne vanilla plan. You could see. Okay, that ain't crazy horse. That's a guy who didn't play very well at guard and he's due, you know, $9.25 million. You can save 6.75 from saying see you later. I'm with you, Jack. He's out the door, I'm afraid.
Well, I think he has to be unless the Raiders really want him as a backup tackle and we can get something for him, even if it's just a sixth round.
And again, you don't need to cut him before the 12th of March. He's under contract. You can wait a little bit. You could wait until after the draft if you really wanted and see if the Raiders want him.
The other one I had is perhaps just holding on to cut Gus Edwards a bit. But if we do cut him, that's $3.125 million from my numbers that we save. Is Gus Edwards the Gus Edwards we need and we want, especially if we're going to have draft capital to look for drafts? And this running back, I think it's gone. We want the money. Okay, he's gone.
He's gone because I think there are some external free agents who could do better than him. And I think the draft is really strong at running back. It's just too rich.
And I, like you had, I think it's time to front load some deals for Slater, as I'll front load the deal for Slater. Would you restructure Derwin James to make even more room? Because there's an ability to do that, and that was in my aggressive plan, is restructure him just to keep that money sort of flowing through a little bit more balanced.
I don't have the terms of his deal in front of me. That's something we could do to create more space if we needed it. The fact is right now we've got the third most space in the NFL. I almost think we've got too much space and not enough good players to spend it on. I would keep that in my pocket if you need to create it sometime after the draft to do some move in June or similar or before the 1st of June. So, there are definitely ways you can create more space. That would be one of them. I've got another cut candidate for you, Jack, and this is one I haven't seen anyone really talk about, actually. I didn't think that Bud Dupree played that well this year.
Ooh, yeah.
Bud Dupree's cap hit this year is more expensive than it was last year. This year, it's going up to $3.625 million.
Yep.
And you can save $2.98 of it by cutting him. And I get it. He's a 10-year veteran. It seems like he brought a lot of levity to the group and the guys liked him being around. If you analyze his per-snap play, he had some flashes, but overall, I think you can upgrade on him either in the draft or in free agency. I would think carefully about cutting him a bit later on into the off-season.
Yes, and I'd like to know what the plan with the edge room is. And obviously, there's another player we need to talk about before we do that. But Dupree, he's another year older. He is a journeyman. He's a veteran. What do you save? 2.9 million? That's
almost three. 2.9.
Almost three. I mean, that's the same as, I mean, if I'm using the same argument to cut Gus the bus,
yep,
then I'd almost have to say and use the same mindset to cut Bud Dupree and look for, I mean, the edge market is ridiculous this offseason anyway. So
and bear with us, listeners. I know we've lost Boza, but we will get there. We'll talk about someone you can bring in like for Bud Dupree off the free agent external market who might just be better than he was this year.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Mac Jack. That's the last big one I want to talk about for this topic. Do you think it's critical they, you know, sorry, I should say apparently there is a fair bit of interest on the market on him. Rumors around the combine is that the Bears are interested, the Bucks are interested. Teams want this guy and he's due to hit free agency in 5 days' time. How hard are you pushing to get this deal done in the next 5 days rather than letting him test the waters and see how much people want to pay him?
It's so hard. It's so hard. I think the number's got to be right. And I've got here, I'd love it if the number was somewhere around 13 to 14 a year. What do you mean? What makes you say
what makes me say it is he just for three seasons, he's played on 19.8 per year.
Correct. Yes.
And I know he's older, but he was also the sixth highest rated edge rusher in the NFL last year per PFF.
Correct.
And there's interest in him. So his agent would say, you can't take a pay cut, my friend. At absolute minimum, you've got to make 19 mil. And these teams out there, they want to pay you, they'll pay you 25. They'll pay you 27.
But are the Bears winning a Super Bowl? Are the Buccaneers winning a Super Bowl? That's the one thing. And I just go, when a player falls off, we saw it with Von Miller, who is exceptional, one of the best edges ever.
Yep.
But when a player falls off, especially in such a physical position, which is edge, and the game is now going back to a smash mouth football with big, strong guards, big, strong running backs. The ball is being run a lot more, which means there's perhaps less time to use that power to rush. I'm not saying that Khalil Mack is not a top 10 edge. I think he is, and I'd love him to stay.
He's 34 years old.
But I just wonder if you then go the 19 or 20 million, all of a sudden you've got a player who might not play the full amount of snaps that we need him to in a Super Bowl run that could be the 2025 season.
I'll tell you my offer. Khalil, I don't want you to hit free agency. We've got 90 mil approximately of cap space. I know lesser actual effective cap space, but 2 years, 44, 24 guaranteed. So really that's like a 1 year, $22 million with $2 million in dead cap if we cut him at the end of this year. So 22 per year, come and stay. You say you like it here. You're part of the furniture. What say you? I'm going to try.
It's too much. I think it's too much. He's going to be 36 at the end of that contract. And I don't know what players, especially on the edge, and I don't have the data in front of me, that are still productive at 36 years old. Not However, that. He is a freak.
What they want to hear from the listeners. So first, what are you looking at?
I'm probably looking, all right, if 13 or 14 is too little, I hear you, and fair enough.
Well, maybe not. Maybe that's what you want to offer him. Maybe you're frugal,
Jack. Let's go, Tommy Tickets. Let's go. I'm offering you 17, which is perhaps $2 million under your market value, but we're going for a Super Bowl. We're going for it. And I'll do everything in my power, Khalil, and you'll see in the movement that we make, we are going for a Super Bowl this year.
We're going for it by paying some other edge rusher like Josh Sweat even more money than we're paying you.
But you've also made millions of dollars in your career.
True.
So what do you want? What do you want, Khalil? Because if you want money, this is the best I can give you. 17 and a half, that's what I can give you with the promise of a Super Bowl. If you want 22 a year, I can't promise you that you're going to get a Super Bowl.
I'd take you to task, man. I'd say, Joe, I took a pay cut last year of whatever it was, again, a few million bucks, and you're trying to tell me that's all I can offer you. I know your cap situation. You're 90 mil in the green. Why are you lowballing one of your best players?
But we're going to get Josh Sweat. We're going to get another edge rusher to contribute in this group, Khalil. This is the thing. We're building a team. There's no I in team. but there's an I in Khalil, and if you want to leave, you can.
Okay. Well, there's an M and there's an A. Bring me back. All right. Okay. You get the gist. Okay. Tell us what you think, yeah. TDU crew.
Yeah, who's, I agree.
Is Jack too low? Am I too high? Is it imperative? Let us know your thoughts.
All right, Al, do you want to take this restricted free agents section pretty quick?
Yeah, pretty quick. The Chargers have already applied the exclusive rights free agent tag on tight end Tucker Fisk, so he will play on an 840K contract in 2025. There are two restricted free agents, that is Stone Smart and Foster Sorrell. However, neither, in my opinion, qualifies to be tagged because the cheapest tag is $3.267 million, and that is more expensive to me than I would pay either of them. I would like to have Stone Smart back, just more on a minimum contract, so see what happens.
Yep.
That's all with them, unless you disagree.
No, not much else. Tucker Fisk, I think, deserves it. Hopefully he can take another step forward after being just a guy off the street. All right, Al, what to do with our internal free agents? I'm going to go straight into J.K. Dobbins, and I'm going to give you three scenarios, one crazy, one aggressive, one conservative. Which one sits with you about JK? He is 27 years old, played for $1.61 million in 2024. The crazy. See if he'll take a modest deal at around $3 million a year. If he wants more, let him walk and spend big on a new RB or draft one early. The aggressive one is offer a 2 or 3 year deal at about $4 to $5 million a year, if medicals are good, by the way. Trusting his upside. If negotiations get pricey, pivot to a free agent running back.
Yep.
Or conservative, re-sign him on a multi-year contract, even if it's $5 million plus a year, to keep a known commodity at RB.
Oh, no. Don't like that one. Don't like the give him a long, kind of quite high-priced deal. I like the draft class. I like the external free agents. I won't say who I would yet, but I would go with your... I'd go with your aggressive one, where you give him a little bit, like 2 years, $8 million or something like that, and see if he's happy with it. If he wants to test the market, we've got other options.
Cool. Great. Did you want to just I'm just going to run some through
keep
and we're happy
him,
to do this?
Yeah,
okay. Yep. All right. Well, this is, I'm tossing and turning.
Actually, Josh, can I take us somewhere? I'll take us somewhere. I don't know if you've got notes on him. I think we should start with the most important internal free agent, in my opinion. And that is Puna Ford. I think Puna is the guy I would be targeting. And apparently there is a lot of interest in this guy. And I've seen projections on what this guy will make from $3.5 million to like $15 million. If you look at the highest paid defensive tackles who all make $18 to $20 million, he played better than some of them this year. So talk me through Puna Ford.
Crazy. Skip and let him walk unless it's a bargain. So around $2 million a year. It's probably not going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
Aggressive. Give him a 1 to 2 year deal at about four a year as a run stopper. Or give him, which is a conservative, so if you want to keep him, about 2 to 3 years at around $8 million a year. So 3 years, $8 million a year. So 8, 16, so 24 over 3, maybe 16 guaranteed. What are you doing?
People are going to think I'm mad. I think Puna Ford's value as a player is $13 million a year. That's what I think. I look at other defensive tackles at the Justin Jones variety. I think he's better than all of them. I know he's a little bit older at 30. And I know he had a poor year for the Bills the year before this. There's a risk that maybe this was a flash in the pan season and you come to really regret the deal. I think anything less than $10 million a year for this guy is a no-brainer for a team who is awash with cap space. So that's what I would do. Although, Jack, if the interest is so significant in this guy and he is going to make $10 to $13 million a year, and you like your comp pick style of GMing where you go, okay, another team pays him. And because they paid him $13 million, that ends up becoming, I don't know off the top of my head, a fourth or a fifth round pick in the next year's comp cycle. That is a shrewd way to GM that Kyle would approve of.
Or do you trust the fact that you've picked Puna Ford and Tietard off the street and they have played at such a high level because of the coaching and because of Minter's defense? And you go, yep, you know what? We'll find those guys again. Don't worry about it.
I'd rather find a Tart replacement and keep Puna as a guy who is arguably a top 10 defensive tackle in the NFL. I'm not confident that through free agency or drafting a tackle in the first three rounds, when you know defensive tackles take a bit longer. We've just seen it, Jack, with Justin Aboigbe, who today yep. you've been spot on with. We've seen Puna. I don't want to muck around with that when we've got the space. I'm giving him at least double-digit million dollars per year to stay in the Powder Blues. That's what I'm
doing. I don't know. There's just a little bit of me that goes, he's had his best year at 30. He's been up and down. What's to say that next year there's a dip? Because there hasn't been a consistent
amount. Especially after you pay him $10 million.
Especially because you think, okay, those guys that are making 18 a year, it's about the consistency of performance. And yes, I understand that Puna played better than some of those top 10 guys, but they're still top 10 guys because they've been there for sort of 3, 4, 5 years. I have one that I want to talk about. What are we doing with Joshua Palmer? Because if he wants anything more than, I'm going to say, 4.5 a year, I think he's gone. I think he has to be. I would love to see a 3-year deal at about anywhere between 3.5 to 4, because I think he's a really, really, really handy depth piece. Mm. I think he's a really handy depth piece as 4 or 5. And we've got the cap space to do it. So I'm looking at, if I was aggressive, 3 years, 14, 13-ish million, maybe with about 9 guaranteed.
Yeah.
What are you doing with Josh Palmer? Or do you reckon he's just going to go somewhere else?
Well, again, he's a guy who apparently has drummed up a little bit of interest out on the market so far, are the reports. And I get it. He's shown enough. He's had games where he's eclipsed 100 yards receiving. I have Dobbins and Palmer and Fulton and Perryman as guys who I would make a form of offer to, but initially it would not be a high offer. I'd let them test the market and see if I want to bring them back, because for each of those guys, there are some external free agents who I might like better for similar or slightly more money. So I don't have a problem, even though PFF projects his value at about $6.5 million per year, so 2 years, 13. If you'd rather offer 4.5 as a starting point, I'm all for that. And then go out, see if people want to pay you. If so, great. We get that, helps our comp formula. If not, you can come crawling back, and that 4.5 just became 3.5, baby.
Because I kind of want to get to our topic 4, and I think most people would want to, the external FAs. Did you have anyone else that you wanted to just quickly talk about internally?
What I will do is I'll tell you the guys who I wouldn't try to sign. Easton Stick, DJ Chark. Let me know if you disagree with any of them. Easton Stick, no. DJ Chark, Jalen Reagor, Hayden Hurst, Chris Rumpf. This one's controversial. Morgan Fox, I'm letting go.
Oh, yeah. Get rid of. Yep.
Shaq Quarterman, Asante yep. Samuel, not trying. Yep. Eli Apple, Marcus May, Brendan Hymus. And this is an interesting one. I'm not making an offer for J.K. Scott initially. To me, even though he's got good hang time, there are a few too many shanks, short punts. I think you could get better even with a 6th-round pick in the draft. So, again, I'm not automatically signing him. So it sounds like you agreed with me. And then let me know quickly before we move on. Here are guys I would make an offer to, or at least engage in negotiations with. Let me know if any of these guys you wouldn't even bother talking to. Taylor Heinicke, J.K. Dobbins, Josh Palmer, Simi Fehoko.
Nah, keep him, yep.
Bradley Bozeman. I want him to be depth.
Depth, yep. And you have to take money as depth.
And I'm saying the same to Sam Mustafa. I'm having a conversation.
Are you? Okay, see, I had him as a cut candidate, but anyway.
Puna, Tier Tart,
yep, yep.
Denzel Perryman,
yep.
Troy Dye,
yep.
Nick Neiman.
Yep.
And last two, Christian Fulton, Tony Jefferson.
Fulton's an interesting one. I have a feeling that his position won't be, and I think he played as well as he could in those first couple. The grabbiness really worried me. I think Christian Fulton is a stopgap. Another year with Hart, and still, hopefully Hart's okay in terms of his concussions. I don't think I'd offer. If I was offering Fulton something, it would be very, very low.
Well, his agent's talking to you. Come on, we're about to hit free agency. Do you want us to stay or not? Are you even talking to this guy? Are you saying, nah, go test the market and come back to us?
What did he play on last year?
He played on 2.45 million last year, and his projection is to go from making 2.45 to about 6 per year, or five and a bit per year.
No way. No way would I offer 5. You're lucky if you're getting 1 year at 3, mate. You're lucky. You're lucky.
All right.
I don't know. I just don't like a guy. I just don't like a guy in the secondary that grabs. And he got absolutely abused. He got abused in the Texans game. He got absolutely abused.
Yeah.
So, nah, not for me. Not for me.
Okay.
All right.
We move on.
Well, what do people think? I'd love to know what people think in the comments, or because this is, it's who knows. So many.
Come on, Eric. I know you like Fulton.
All right. So, what external free agents should the team sign, and should they trade for someone? Now, I made this list and I made these scenarios before a couple of moves. So, Alistair, you're going to have to help me out here. All right. Yeah. My first play is called the Big Splash Play. And if we've got all this money, so I said, and this is before he was signed, that we go and get a top tier guard in Trey Smith. He was wanting about 21.5 per year. Then I say, we're going to use all the 90 million. We go and get Chris Godwin. 3 years, 20 million. Then we go your boy, DJ Reed, for $14-ish million a year over 3 years. And then we go with a value, I think, edge in Hassan Reddick, 2 years for 12.5. Just to give you what that means, there's a slight cushion of around 2 million on it before we had 70. So actually, that's only 68 million. So we've actually got more left over. What do you think about going and making big splashes? So that's 4 big splash players.
There are just a few. Look, my philosophy, which we've discussed to death in our own separate powder keg thread, I'm happy to pay cream of the crop players very handsome salaries, as we just discussed with Rashawn Slater. Generally, I don't think the best teams hand out really good contracts in free agency to your high-value free agents who maybe aren't top 10 at their position. And for me, Trey Smith, even though he's very good, is not great. Chris Godwin, the age profile, he found a way to be productive this year, but he's a player who started getting injured. Giving those guys too much money are the types of free agents I generally prefer to stay away from. DJ Reed, different story. I think he's a great scheme fit and he's a player who I would think about targeting, especially if Christian Fulton is a guy you want to let walk. Hassan Reddick, different issue. He had the, you know, refusing to play stuff. He's more hoping you get a really good player at a decent price because teams are off him. Hey, if you think Harbaugh can get the most out of that guy, he's a fucking good edge rusher who brings the speed and bend that the Chargers desperately lack at the moment. So he's his own kind of kettle of fish. I don't mind talking to that guy if you feel like you can rein in the personality. He did some bad stuff. He refused to play. He was copping ludicrous fines per week.
Yeah.
Then finally took the field and didn't do great. So there's a bit to deal with there, Jack. You've got to trust Harbaugh and his man management skills to have a chat with him and go, you're a sex addict? You like sex? You like sex? Listeners, I don't know if you've heard that clip of Harbaugh from college, but gosh. he's got away with words, or old Jim. But yeah, interesting. But I don't love that approach. So keep going with me. What other strategies? Keep going.
Okay.
What other strategies? So, Jack?
So that was taking up. That's a lot of cap room in 4 players, right? The next one I did was the one big signing, then journeyman, because and again. You'll notice, listeners, that I kind of want an offensive lineman. And you'll notice when we do our draft prep that I want an offensive lineman in the first, however controversial as that may be. Trey Smith again. So big deal. But then I went to try and find some bargain basement players looking for depth, also looking for some leadership. So Tyron Smith is on the market, and we know he's had some injury issues. He's 34. But if you could get him for 1 year, less than $8 million, I think that's not a bad person to have there. You're going to lose Pipkins as a bit of a swing. You don't know what's happening with Sorrell. Don't mind it. Very injury prone. Bobby Wagner, Mike Hilton, DeAndre Hopkins.
Ugh.
So we're looking at a 34-year-old, a 34-year-old, a 30-year-old, and a 32-year-old.
Yep.
We're getting everything here, bargain, 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 basement. So very, very low contracts. Everything's sort of looking at around less than $12 million a year.
I just don't think I love a single player that you you mentioned there. Mike Hilton's a good player, but slot corner is the one spot I feel pretty good about when you've got Derwin spending a lot of time there and then Tahib still spending some time there. So, like, Mike Hilton, if we signed him, I'd be a bit surprised, but he's still a good football player. I don't have a problem with him. DeAndre Hopkins, I do have an issue with because I want to get to the big names at the end. There are other, if we want to take 30-plus wide receiver, I'd rather go back to Mike Williams than DeAndre Hopkins personally. I'm not saying that's what I do. But I would go there before DeAndre Hopkins. And I know we're going to get to Devontae in a little bit and we can talk about him. But yeah, that I think the strategy is the one I would like to do. And to kind of round this out, I'll tell you some cheaper, lower price guys I like. I like that strategy. I just don't love that execution, but I see where you're coming from for sure.
Okay, last one, very similar. This is no big signings whatsoever. This is all just depth, relatively older players other than one. Zeitler at guard for about $6 million a year. Tyron Smith again, just as a bit of depth at about $7 million. Bobby Wagner, I love him. He keeps popping up. I think he's great. I think Diane Headley could learn from a Hall of Fame linebacker. That's more of a intangible signing than something we might see on the field. But then I go, you know what? Maybe we need a downfield threat. Maybe Marquise Brown at about 2 years, about $9
million. Hollywood. Then
so that was kind of, that's the strength in the team with some decent free agent signings. But then you've got a hell of a lot more room to make big splash plays with trades and things. That's where I was going with there.
Yeah. And that's, again, a similar kind of philosophy. You're hitting on some cheaper styles of player and leaving some space for a couple of splashes. We're going a bit on the fly here, listeners. I think what I'm going to do now, Jack, before we talk about some big kahuna to end the show, for 5 minutes, I'm just going to talk about some guys who I think could be good scheme fits or value propositions. And feel free to stop me and talk about anyone in particular. Amongst the wide receiver group, I think these guys all would help, especially if the team loses Josh Palmer. Darius Slayton from the Giants. I feel like he's a 28-year-old who has shown flashes with Daniel Jones and could really help us with his explosive yak ability. He might cost more than $10 million a year, though, so he wouldn't be cheap, but you'd be hoping you pair him with Herbert and he finds that level where he actually becomes a solid wide receiver two type. Mike Williams, Marquez Valdez-Scantling are my cheaper wide receiver four. One of them's contested catch. One of them brings some juice. Played well for New Orleans last year. There's some things I'm considering. Running back, Jack. No one wants to touch him because of the very serious and ugly knee injuries. But if J.K. Dobbins is injury prone, Nick Chubb.
Yeah.
Who looks like he's lost his form, but he's still 29 years old. Do you want to take a risk on this guy who hasn't really played football properly since 2023, just in case it hits? Just in case after 2 years off, he looks like his old self? That's one to ponder, because the other guys like Najee and Aaron Jones, I'm not as interested in personally. I'll let you talk a bit about this one, Jackie. Tight end, we've been talking about how we want to a tight end. Will Disley is a very useful dual-purpose Y tight end. We're clearly except still missing, except in the playoffs, we're still missing that guy who can hit the seam and be a bit more explosive. Three options, including one who's just become available. You've got Mike Gesicki, who just had his best year at the Bengals. You've got Juwan Johnson, who played with Justin Herbert at Oregon and has always shown flashes at the Saints. And today you've got Evan Ingram, who's made a Pro Bowl, who's coming off some injuries this year, but the Jacksonville Jaguars just released him. Ingram, Gesicki, Juwan Johnson, do you think there's value in paying, you know, a three-year, 30-something million-dollar deal to a tight end so you don't rock up on draft day needing to take one in rounds one or two?
I remember watching the New York Giants a number of years ago and watching Evan Engram make some fairly incredible plays. Definitely not your big tight end that's going to be helping block design runs and things, but the guy can play. The fact that he's coming off injuries, the fact that Jacksonville kind of don't want him perhaps, he's going to want a bit of cash. I wanted Evan Engram a number of years ago in free agency. I thought he was one of the top prospects that Justin Herbert could work with. I do love Gesicki, but I think Gesicki's going to ask for too much money.
Engram's used to making $13.5 million a year, and he's coming off a torn labrum. That was his issue, and the Jags didn't want to pay him the $19 million he was owed this year.
I think he's probably somewhere in between that. I think he's probably worth anywhere between 12 and 16, I'd say.
Well, are you doing it, Jack? Are you going for one of these tight ends, or are you going to say, we're going to go with Disley and just hit the draft, and you're really telegraphing need there in the first
years? I'm going tight end because I want interior offensive line in the draft. That's what I'm doing.
Okay. Okay. All right. We're pushing on. Centers, I don't actually love spending money on a center because I think the two main candidates, you've got Drew Dorman, who I think is a poor scheme fit. I know it's been said, but really he's an athletic zone blocker and not the best pass protector, and he's going to be expensive. You've got a guy who's a great scheme fit in Ryan Kelly for the Colts who has not been able to stay healthy. He's had knee problems. I'd rather give some money to Bozeman and allow Zion to train there and then probably hit that position in the draft or someone who's got flexibility in the draft. I'd be happy if Ryan Kelly's signed, fine. I don't want to give a whole bunch of money to Drew Dorman or Coleman Shelton.
No, centers don't grow on trees, and I think you kind of have to develop a center within your own scheme from the base up for them to be the most effective, unless they're exceptional, like a Corey Linsley type.
Yep, spot on. I agree 100%. Zeitler is my favorite guard prospect, Jack. So I just love the experience. He's a former Raven. He was one of the highest graded guards in the NFL last year with the Lions. Tick, tick, tick. The guy has played 13,500 snaps at right guard, which is what the team needs. He has basically not missed a single game in 13 seasons of football. You don't want to jinx the guy, but he plays every damn snap. You'll hear a lot of think pieces, sorry, Ryan and Kyle, about Will Fries from the Colts. Okay, if you want to go down that pathway, you're not dealing with a history of production. That's more of a projection. And he did look really good before he hurt his tibia this year. I would almost look more at a James Daniels from the Steelers, a guy who's a gap scheme fit, Brandon Scherf, these kind of guys. But I would definitely hit guard and free agency. I don't want to go into the draft needing to draft everyone. Zeitler or a veteran, they're coming in.
My goal organizationally would be to get veteran stopgaps who know the scheme, but continue to build the offensive line through the draft, build up those guys and have homegrown talent. Eventually, I would hope that Herbert has four pieces of homegrown talent in front of him in 2 years' time.
Me too. Draft and develop, baby. Let's go, Jack, 3 minutes on the defensive side of the ball, and then let's talk about a couple of these marquee types. Let's talk about Metcalf and Devontae and that. So for this 3 minutes, I'm just going to say the guys I like from the positions. At corner, DJ Reed or Darius Slay, who just became available. I know Slay's 34, who just won a Super Bowl with the Eagles. These guys are perfect zone corner scheme fits, whereas your Chavarius Ward types, Paulson Adebo, Carlton Davis, more your man cover corners, great footballers, just don't think it works for what Jesse Minter likes to do.
Rasul Douglas, no?
Rasul Douglas is a good player and a good scheme fit. Good player and good scheme fit. So if that happens, happy days.
Yep.
Safety's not interested. We've got enough, even though there are some decent guys out there. I've always loved Javon Holland. I just don't think we need to target that position group. Jack, linebackers. It's a really good linebacker group in free agency. I've always enjoyed Perryman as a run defender, but he is injury prone. And the names, Dre Greenlaw from the Niners or Elandon Roberts from the Steelers or Jamien Sherwood from the Jets. These are thumpers. And I don't believe that. Basically, I believe until I've seen it, we don't have a solution. And what I saw from Junior Colson last year told me I'd rather add someone to the group to go with Henley and hope that Coulson steps up rather than trust that he'll step up. So I'm adding another veteran to that room. If it's not Perryman, it's one of those aforementioned guys, Jack.
I don't think you can trust Troy Dyer to have the season that he did either. I think he's kind of hit his ceiling as a player, which is fine because he was essentially a guy off the street. So I agree. That's why I love Bobby Wagner. Bobby Wagner's not a thumper,
yeah,
but at least it just provides. And we don't know what Coulson is yet. Clearly, they've seen something in him. He was effective in college. Just someone to... I'm always wary of paying big money to linebackers after the turnstile it's been.
Yeah. Kendricks
and Thomas Davis and Davis. Stuff.
So. Well, that's why I thought I didn't even bother with Lavonte David or Wagner because I felt like their relationships with Todd Bowles and Dan Quinn, respectively, so good. There's a chance they go back. Edge rushers, everyone's talking about Josh Sweat.
If you're sweaty boy.
Fast and sweaty, man. He is a good guy, player. So if they decide to pay him after dominating the Super Bowl because we've got the cap space, he brings the bend and the speed that the team sorely lacks. And if they don't get him, that becomes a need in the draft for sure. If tying back to the Dupree comments I made, Jack, Derek Barnett from the Texans, former first round pick, if he wants to play on a 1 year, $4.5 million deal or something like that, last year he had 5 sacks, 74 run defense grade. I think he will play better than Bud Dupree. My final one. Yes.
Well, I was going to say, like, what about Baron Browning? Did you ever factor him in? I know he's coming off some injuries and things, but I saw enough from him when he was playing with Denver to be like, oh, this guy's got some zip.
Super athletic.
Yeah, had only 26 years old. Don't mind that either.
It's not a bad free agent group. Guys like Malcolm Kuntz from the Raiders, Baron Browning. You mentioned Hassan Reddick. If you'd rather not telegraph needs, you can attack that position for sure. And then defensive tackles. Everyone's talking Milton Williams. The guy's never played more than 50% of snaps in a season. He's played for 4 seasons and he had 6 sacks this season, 2 sacks in the Super Bowl. And he's projected to earn $20 million a year because he's 26. And I think some team's going to seriously overpay a very talented, explosive 3 technique. Don't get me wrong. Old conservative over here. I'm bringing in 38-year-old Calais Campbell, man. I'm going with 38-year-old Calais Campbell, who last year for the Dolphins had an 82.3 grade. He's still good. He's a Walter Payton Man of the Year. I reckon you'll get out of it for $3 million. Let's go with him and draft someone at that position. That's what I say, my friend.
Listen, this is Howie Roseman's wet dream. I have won a Super Bowl, and all of these guys are free agents and they're sitting there and everyone's going to overpay them. And I'm going to get them comp picks, baby. And I'm going to move up in the draft and I'm going to keep drafting big men and the offensive and defensive line because that's what I do. I'm the best general manager in the NFL. I am staying away from any Eagles player. You've captured lightning. Even Josh Sweat, I'm going, Milton Williams, I would love to see. But don't let recency bias creep in because you tend to always pay for guys. They've won a Super Bowl. Get them in here. And then
they're the new Bill Belichick. They're the new Patriots.
God, they're just so good at what they do. So, my mind's boggling at the moment. Like it's overload.
There's too much. You can't keep up. All right. Let's end the show with this, Jack, because there are some outrageous names being floated as trade candidates. Ones we won't even talk about. Miles Garrett requests a trade. Obviously the Browns for the time being are saying we will not countenance it. Micah Parsons has been discussed. Reportedly they've begun contract talks in Dallas. He's playing on the 5th-year option this year. He doesn't want to play on that, even though it's $24 million. He wants a long-term deal. See if they get it done. Here are the 3 guys I want us to talk about, and anyone else you wanted to, Jack. Trey Hendrickson, Davante Adams, DK Metcalf. Maybe we go wide receiver first because it's more of an either-or discussion.
Yep.
DK Metcalf requires a trade because he's under contract this year for $10.8 million. The reports are he wants a $30 million per year extension, and the Seahawks want a first and a third, is what's being reported. Devontae Adams has been released, so he's cost nothing other than the contract that he's willing to accept. Talk me through the thinking, the factors, the feelings.
Oh, okay. Let me put it this way. DK Metcalf looks sexy, and I want DK Metcalf. But are we going to be happy with paying DK Metcalf close to $30 million a year when Ladd McConkey has more touchdowns and more yards and more catches than him next year? Oh, no.
Oop. It looks like we've just lost Jack temporarily, but I feel like I knew where he was going there. So he was saying Ladd McConkey is essentially still going to be the number one banana. You've got, and you're paying a guy to come in really to be productive, but to serve a role. He's going to serve an offensive role, which might not on its face produce in the same way as the $30 million or so that you're handing the guy. I see where he's coming from with that. I think, though, Tao has said in his infinite wisdom, one of our friends on StormCloud, think about the important function that he serves in the offense. The team definitely needs an X receiver. They need someone who can separate or just be a target when you're going for contested catches down the field. And we know that he has an existing relationship with Sanjay Lal. So you can reunite him with a former coach who's had a lot of success with. If it turns out that we trade for DK Metcalf, it will be the biggest swing so far on in Joe Ortiz's watch. And whether these swings connect tend to determine if you are a Super Bowl contender or if you become an also-ran, because you thought that you were going for it, you're reaching for the stars, but you've fallen and you haven't landed on a cloud. You've actually come tumbling down, crashing all the way to the rock-hard earth. And with DK Metcalf, it's worth mentioning that there are at least a few aspects of his game that should cause you to stop and think. One of them is that the Seahawks made him a high-volume guy. He had 152 targets in 2022, 112 in 2023, 108 in 2024, and McConkey had 124 targets last year. Of those higher volume targets, he does actually struggle to be an efficient receiver. So he only caught 61% of his targets in 2024, which ranked 82nd out of 112 eligible receivers. It's not that he drops the ball, it's that he has a slightly low contested catch rate. And for a guy who is so well built, for whatever reason, is it the quarterback? Is it him? It takes a lot of throws to get him his 1,000 yards per year production, because he does have some issues. It has some issues with drops and just not catching the ball. He also struggles, if you look at metrics where you try to remove quarterbacks not throwing the ball accurately to him, he ranked 91 in the NFL in true catch rate last year. So it's not just Geno Smith's fault. For whatever reason, DK Metcalf doesn't convert as effectively as a guy like Ladd McConkey. What I will say for him, though, is he is a good separator, at least against man coverage. So he was actually the fifth highest ranked wide receiver in the NFL when facing man coverage, which is something the team definitely needs. And he's such a good athlete. His straight line athleticism is fantastic. Doesn't offer lots of yak, but you can see why for an offense that needs an X receiver, they need a guy who can body wide receivers on slant routes, maybe get open for an occasional deep pass. These are the type of guys who will make a difference in your offense. Jack.
Hello. We've got you back. My laptop has just completely had a malfunction and shut down.
That's okay. What I was talking about, I was going through the various elements of DK Metcalf. I talked about the positives and I talked about the negatives. And I'm now going to counter that with the Devontae Adams chat, and maybe we can bring you in at this point. I know you've got some feelings about it too. So talk to me about Devontae Adams as a proposition off the free agent scrap heap.
Well, listen, the first thing I think of when I think of Devontae Adams is the baggage that he brings. I, for what it's worth, and the only insight you have of these players is what they put out into the ether, into the world. When I watched that show Receiver, I wasn't a huge fan of his attitude, how he treated the Raiders organization. Obviously wants to win now. The connection with Aaron Rodgers always worries me, even though obviously Aaron Rodgers is not our quarterback. But if you want a guy who's going to be productive, who's going to, who knows what it's like to catch balls from a guy who can absolutely zip it, Devontae Adams looks like a very good prospect at the right price. Would I think that he's a good prospect on the field? Absolutely. Off the field, I don't know. But then I go, well, we've got a really strong head coach now, a strong culture, a strong organization. Maybe that will withstand the Devontae Adams experience, the prima donna, the guy that is meant to be one of the best ever. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm torn on it. I would probably go conservative and say no, give me Metcalf. But $30 million for Metcalf is a lot compared to something like what would Devontae Adams want?
I don't know. Maybe 22. I think he'll still cost a bit. And look, to point the negatives, I know you mentioned off the field, he also has got less efficient as he's got a bit older the last 2 years. I do think he's slowing down perhaps a little bit, although I still think he'll get you close to that 1,000-yard mark. I am less concerned off the field, Jack, for the reason that the first 8 years of his career or so, you didn't hear anything while he was in Green Bay and the team was winning. He was viewed as a consummate professional, great route runner, hard worker. All of this circus has tended to occur in this latter part of his career to the Raiders, who were losing, to the Jets, which was a clusterfuck. So I would be banking on the fact that if he comes to LA, where he's happy on the West Coast and the team is good, maybe we get back to that version of Devontae, who you never heard anything other than dominating for years at the Green Bay Packers.
Field stretcher that DK Metcalf is. And that's the one thing we need, is a field stretching wide receiver. I would worry that he hinders Ladd McConkey's development. Ladd McConkey should be having 1,300, 1,400 yards a year with 100-plus catches with the way that he ended last season. And I wonder if the Devontae Adams-style receiver takes away from that development.
Yes. I don't know why that would differ so much to Ladd. I guess maybe because Devontae is a lower air yards possession style of receiver. Metcalf can be a bit more explosive and get down the field, so maybe fewer targets. I get what you're saying with that. I just think it's going to help Herbert to have two guys on third down who get open and catch the ball. And maybe he bring... And you've got to trade for one. You don't have to trade for the other. Don't forget what that means. To get Metcalf is costing you the money you're paying Metcalf and maybe a first-round player and maybe a third, you know. So I think that, for me, that tilts the scales in favor of Devontae, because you're not parting with picks. You're just giving him his contract. Interesting. Let us know, TDU crew, what you think. And then, just as we reach the end of our show, Trey Hendrickson. I know you can't get all these guys. If you're going to trade for DK, you can't trade for Hendrickson. But if you just pay Devontae Adams in free agency, you could decide to trade for Trey Hendrickson. This is a guy who's had an outrageous 67 sacks in his last 4 years. First team All-Pro. Reigning first team All-Pro, as I said. So what would you do? Is he a guy you would rather... Let's say, I'll give you a hypothetical. You can give a first and something else for Hendrickson, who's 30, or for Metcalf, who's 27, where are you going with that?
I'm going Metcalf, because it's okay. So... We've never, ever seen Justin Herbert with a tier one prime career receiver. We've never have. But we've seen a guy who's white, who's an edge player, who's prolific. We've seen one of them. We've Trey Hendrickson just going to be Joey Bosa.
I think what you said there was telling, because my big problem is, of all the football I've watched, I've never looked at DK Metcalf and thought, you're a tier one receiver. I wish I had you. I've always thought he's a 2A. He's a league average X receiver who frustrates you a bit and does some stuff that makes you go, wow, but hasn't been able to quite put it together like your best guys at that position. So then if you're going to make him the highest paid receiver in the NFL or whatever he wants, that concerns me. But you love the Dar Lal, so you want Lal to have his boy.
There has to be some wiggle room on that contract. If you're in contract talks, you say, hey, Justin Herbert, the best, you're going to have the best quarterback you've ever had throwing you the ball, mate. We're going to have to give up a bit of draft capital, which is going to hurt our chances of winning. It means that I know you want $30 million a year, but I don't think we can offer you that. I mean, I think you're going to have to take something around that 23 to 27. That's what we're going to have to pay you. Mm-hmm. And happy with that, we'd love to have you. But if you want to be the highest paid player in the league and you want to go and have not Justin Herbert throw the ball, that's on you, man. Like, we can't do much else. And then the second option is Devontae Adams is free, essentially, in terms of draft capital, and you've got some more money to spend, or you've got some draft capital, which will not cost you a first and a third.
Yeah. What's really bothering me is I'm setting myself up now to be resistant to Metcalf instead of excited when it happens, because I do think there are some reasons why it's the wrong call, just like the giving up capital, and I'm not sure he's really elite. But once he's a Charger, I promise, once you're a Charger, you're a Charger, and I'm going to love you and I'm going to want you to succeed. But this is what we do in the offseason, man. There's no football to talk about, so we talk about all the permutations, and it's been a pleasure spending almost an hour and a half returning and talking to you about it. And we will have Andy back soon, listeners. We're going to come back to you probably after the first wave of free agency, after the first few days. And yeah, Jack, we're just getting started. We've got draft prep. We've got all of the feels. We've got all of the vibes. We've got Chargers football. And we're back on the airwaves. TDU is back, baby. And it's been good to talk to you.
We are. It's been awesome. Thank you very much. My head is actually spinning after a full week at work as well. I hope the heads on the listeners and the viewers aren't spinning either. Hopefully you've got some hot takes. We'd love to hear them. And maybe in our free agency shows, we might get some mailbag going and get some interaction, I think. I think that's something we're going to aim to do as a podcast a little more this year, to try and get people's voices, our listeners, who we all love, into our shows, because it's always great when we have that fan engagement. So, Alistair, I'll let you do the goodbye, because I count on my phone. So, okay. I'll say
ta-ta. We'll see you all next time on the Thunder Down Under Chargers.
Good night to all!